Now, Daniel McCarthy is going to be, well, he's the candidate for Leichhardt and the boss. I guess you call you Bob Catter. Does he call you the boss?
No, definitely not. I know what they call me, and it's not boss.
Right, okay.
This is, you know, family radio, so I can't tell you what they call me.
I appreciate that, mate. I appreciate that. Okay, now, what are you two blokes doing? You're obviously building up to this May election. Daniel McCarthy, you are the candidate. Tell me what you've got to offer. You've got an incumbent there that seems to have been there since the year dot. What are you actually offering to the people?
Bob and I have been running around Port Douglas and Mossman. I've been in Cairns for 34 years now, so I get up here quite a bit. And, you know, I think that the mood out there in the community is we definitely need things to move forward. We're not talking about large-scale developments and all of that, but people across the region, across Leichhardt, whether you're talking about people in the CBD in Cairns or out in the suburbs, Port Douglas, you know, Cooktown, Weipa, the Cape, everywhere, people are sick and tired of nothing happening. We see state and federal governments of both political persuasions sell us out all the time to please their green masters in the major capital cities, you know, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Canberra. And you know, we don't want to turn our place into what they've got down south, but we do need jobs for our young people. We're sick and tired of seeing the brain drain. You know, many qualified people, and particularly our young people, having to look for other parts of the country to go to so they can build their futures and build their families. So we need to have sensible development. We need industry-enabling infrastructure to build our region and grow and strengthen our economy and move away from this being so tied to and vulnerable to the fluctuations in the tourism industry. So we need to grow our agricultural sector. We need to improve our roads to enable our agriculture sector. We need to look after the Great Barrier Reef. And we just, you know, we need to have some sensible development.
Mm. Now, looking back at what you've done, you came here up into the far north at a very early age with your parents and siblings. So you very much love this part of the world. Now, you've been a fisherman, a big game fisherman. You tell me before we came on air, you love barra fishing. So you're out amongst nature. But apart from that, you've also worked for fisheries, haven't you? You've been somebody who's been in one of those boats checking up on people and what have you, whether they're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So that experience, what do you bring to the table?
Well, it's interesting, Paul, that you raise that, because I've been very blessed to have worked in, you know, I've had a fascination with the ocean and with the environment all my life. I used to say I've got salt water running through my veins. You know, it comes down a long, long family heritage line there. But I have worked in every single sector of the marine industry in North Queensland. I actually, when we left school, the day after, I left the graduation party at about 6 o'clock in the morning and went straight to work at the Cairns Slipway.
Wow.
Chipping and grinding paint, and that was a particularly hard, long day. But and I've never stopped working. I've worked in several different jobs at the same time. Mm. When you've got a young family, that's just what you got to do to make ends meet. You know, I've never
When you've been out in the real world and you've had a real job, so to speak, why the hell would you want to get into politics?
That is a very, very good question, Paul. But what really drove me to politics was seeing back in the early 2000s, we watched the government, the federal government, going through, a conservative federal government, mind you, going through the rezoning of the Great Barrier Reef. Now, I, for one, will fight, and I do fight very hard, to protect the Great Barrier Reef. But we need to have sensible management. And it became very early on in that process, back in the early 2000s, that the outcome was going to be a politically based outcome. It wasn't going to be what's best for the Great Barrier Reef, and it wasn't going to be best for the people that responsibly use the Great Barrier Reef. Ooh. So the choice was, I could either hide in the bushes and let the process take its course, or I could jump in there, boots and all, with other like-minded, passionate people and fight for good, positive outcomes.
Yep.
And we had a good, positive impact on that process.
Yep.
It could have been done significantly better, with a much better outcome for the Great Barrier Reef and a much better outcome for people that responsibly use the Great Barrier Reef. We went straight from that process to another battle for the Coral Sea. And it was virtually a 10-year process. And then in March last year,
You went to Canberra.
Went down to Canberra.
That was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, it certainly was. And we had a significant win there where I was able to get secure the support of all 11 crossbench senators at the time. And I think, as far as I'm aware, that's the only time the government has had the full support of the crossbench in the Senate. So that was a significant day and a really good outcome, because we, instead of having our Coral Sea locked up and only having access for a very select few, which in this case is actually two businesses, we've got a sensible outcome out there. It's certainly not perfect, but it's a far better, it's planets apart than it was, than it was at any stage during that long-winded process.
Yeah, so. Well done for that. Now, Bob Catter is here. Bob, what did you see in Daniel McCarthy as a candidate for Leichhardt?
He ran as independent against us in the last election, and we ran very poorly, and I won't go into that. But he ran very, very well. And rang him on three or four occasions, and he said, tell Bob not to ring me again. I'm not going to run for his party now or ever.
Right.
So we said, well, we'll look elsewhere. But anyway, it was a change of heart.
Let us just divert slightly. Now, certainly your party is a high-profile party. There's no doubt about that. Very high-profile, and you're a high-profile politician. But the spotlight hasn't been on you recently. It's been on One Nation. Now, I want to get your thoughts on One Nation, the documentary that's happened, and what Ashby and his Queensland mate have been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, and Pauline Hanson to a certain extent. I know you guys are for guns, aren't you? For guns for farmers.
Very strongly.
Yes. So how do you see it and what's happened with One Nation?
My first initial reaction was, you know, why didn't we think of getting some money off some of these people? My second reaction was, we could never touch money from overseas. I think that they were very ill-advised.
I think it's damaged the brand of One Nation. I really do.
Well, you would be in a better position as a commentator, Paul, make that observation.
Not really. You're in politics. I'm not. But just looking at it from a person who votes, as a member of the public as well, they have damaged that brand of One Nation. And Pauline Hanson's brand has been damaged, I believe. Because they look like a bunch of cowboys.
All I could say is apparently they were, you know, running around trying to set us up. But apparently we were a bit too cunning. We didn't go overseas for any money or anything. But they were looking at other things. And I thought, but, you know, we've never been overseas for any money in a million years. Would we do that? And I don't mean to be sort of one-upping them or anything or having a shot at them by saying that. I'd ever been holier than thou.
Can I ask you a question?
Go on.
Bob Catter, would you like to weaken the gun laws in Australia? Yes or no?
Paul, you are looking at one of the strongest pro-gun men this country has ever seen, right? Switzerland's never been touched in 120 years. Oh, we respect your neutrality. Yeah, like every household has a gun and it has the lowest death rate with guns in Europe. So you know, I mean, maybe my mind is conditioned by the fact I was a frightened little kid, 19 years of age, going off to fight an army 40 times my size after my grandmother's generation had lost, you know, and my great-grandmother's generation had lost someone in our family. I was scared silly, and maybe that's the reason why I have. But also, I mean, we're a bush of frontier family. I mean, it's just a screwdriver on the wall. It's just another implement that you have.
Now, I can understand that, the person on the property, but should... I mean, I'll come back to this. Do you want to weaken our laws, our gun laws?
No, you use the word weaken. I want more people to have guns in this country, and I make no apologies for it. We had no gun laws in this state at all in 1988. No gun laws at all. You could just walk in off the street, buy an AK-47, 350 rounds of ammunition, walk out again, right? No gun laws at all. Oh, horror. There must be millions of deaths. Eight deaths with guns. New South Wales, with draconian laws, they had 38 deaths with guns. We had eight, they had 38. Victoria, with almost banning of guns, I mean, they are one of the most stringent gun laws in the world. They didn't, you know, they could 50%. We had eight, they should have had 12. They didn't have 12, they didn't have 24, they didn't have 36, they didn't have 48. They had 54 deaths with guns, right? Lowest death rate with guns in the United States, North Dakota, The second lowest, South Dakota. Highest death rate with guns, Washington, D.C. Who's got the most stringent gun laws in America? Washington, D.C. Who has no gun laws at all? North Dakota, South Dakota. They have the highest gun ownership in the world.
But you wouldn't want to go back, Bob, to the days before John Howard and Port Arthur? You wouldn't want to go back to those days?
No. You said John Howard. You know, I greatly respect John Howard, right? But you saying to me that I should make a decision that my country should trust the rest of the world and our neighbours so much that I should disarm my country. That's what you're saying to me. And then you're saying that I should mistrust my own fellow Australian citizens, that I should disarm them. Do you understand what you're saying, the implications of what you are saying to me? I believe that countries like Israel and countries like Switzerland is one of the civilised countries on earth, right? And every single household has a rifle with 9 rounds of ammunition. And that is what protects them as a family. Mm. No one's going to go breaking into houses in Switzerland.
Right.
This is not a good idea.
Right.
So people don't get killed in break-ins in Switzerland, nor do they in North Dakota and South Dakota. So I'm just standing on scientific, empirical evidence, my argument stands.
I understand what you're saying about you believe that everybody should have the right to protect themselves and everybody should be able to have a gun. But do you think the general public to be able to go out and buy semi-automatic weapons, we shouldn't have that situation in this country? Or are you saying we should?
Paul, you asked the question again and again, and I would have thought I'd made my position, you know, very clear to you.
Okay,
you
know, all right.
That I am a pro-gun person.
Gotcha. Right?
The only countries on earth that have no guns, we know what countries they are. The only people, there are certain people in this country, I hope you're not one of them, that are not happy until the only people with guns are the people in uniform. The only people with guns are the people in uniform, right? And we know what sort of country that is. And when you think about it, you give that right to the government, you have given away the greatest freedom that you ever should have enjoyed.
Daniel, how do you feel? You back what Bob says, basically, that we should all have guns?
Well, I'm a bit of a pig shooter myself. I like shooting, well, not so much like shooting feral animals, but I've spent a lot of time shooting feral animals. I see the destruction they do to our environment. I see the thousands of turtle eggs, for instance, and cassowary eggs that gets eaten by feral pigs. I see feral cats running around in the bush everywhere you go. Every national park we have, it seems like national parks in Queensland is just a free-for-all zone for feral animals to destroy our environment. And last I checked, national parks were supposed to be set up to preserve our environment. You know, we need to be able to have sensible management and have people, and obviously recreational hunters is a good way to do that. Obviously, it's certainly not ideal for everybody, and I certainly personally, I don't want everybody walking into the shop and walking out with guns. You know, like that's what we could do when I was a 20-year-old. You could walk into Kmart and walk out with a rifle over your shoulder. Well, with some of the extremist views we have on both ends of the spectrum in our nation today, with some of the people that have come here and are refusing to assimilate, some of the extremists, particularly on the left, like every time I talk about managing crocodiles, I literally get death threats. So I'm particularly pleased that those people can't walk into a shop and walk out with a rifle. So we do need to have sensible management. It is foolish to disarm the country. I 100% agree with that, because we just make ourselves vulnerable. It's as simple as that. However, we do need to have sensible management there.
We're back in the studio now with Bob Katter and Dan McCarthy, who's the Katter Party candidate for the seat of Leichhardt in the upcoming federal election. Let's get on to the area of Cairns Hospital. We've had the ramping. It's just a diabolical situation with Cairns Hospital. And in fact, hospitals right around Australia and all around this particular state. So what are you having a look at there?
Yeah, absolutely. I can speak very firsthand. My mother passed away only a week or so ago. She was in the Cairns Private Hospital at the time. It's been a very, very tough week a couple of weeks for our family. At the same time, my father was rushed to what we used to call the base hospital, but the Cairns Hospital, in an ambulance from a dementia ward where he is at. And I was at his bedside, went from my mother's bedside at one hospital to my father's bedside at another hospital till about 3 o'clock in the morning, till he was all sorted out and okay, and went to sleep, thankfully. Had settled down his situation at the time. And I was in there, and that was a week night. I was supposedly a quieter night, and there was ambulances ramped everywhere. There was people coming and going, the normal chaos that you see in the ED. We need to upgrade the Cairns Hospital. I was only looking at the figures only a few weeks ago with Bill Cummings, very, very highly respected economist in Cairns. Everybody knows Bill Cummings. And looking at the figures there, the Cairns Hospital in the last 12 months put literally a handful of people shy of 100,000 people for the year. Townsville Hospital was right on 85,000. The figures, just off the top of my head, I think it was 982 million, the budget for Townsville, and Cairns was only just over 900. So we're doing 15% more people on about 15% less budget. It is absolutely no-brainer, and it is disgraceful that it has been allowed to happen by state government and federal governments for far too long.
If you're spending like $5,000 million on yet another tunnel in Brisbane, and you are spending nearly $300 million on a football stadium that is not needed and not wanted in Townsville, you are out there blatantly buying votes, and you are spending the money, the taxpayers' money, buying votes instead of delivering services. And that is tragic. And if you want to keep building pleasure domes in Brisbane, along the Brisbane River, and tunnels in Brisbane to buy yourself votes, and we keep putting up with politicians that do that, this bloke has talked about economic development. You know, Dan McCarthy has talked about economic development. Not once in all of this interview has he talked about buying votes off somebody or giving them something to get some votes off them. So, Paul, very good interview, and God bless McCarthy for standing his ground.
Absolutely. Look, we've covered a lot of ground, but finally, Daniel, your final pitch why you should be the next member for Leichhardt.
Well, it's time we had a new era for the North. We need to develop things. We need to get our economy moving. We need to engage our younger generations and provide a future for them so they can stay in the region.
Thank you, fellas. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Paul, a very great honour to be on your program and to meet with what was the greatest program in Australia by a long way for a long time.
Willis's program. God bless him. R.I.P. Thanks, boys.
Thank you.